Less than a year out now from the 2024 presidential election, newsrooms are in the preliminary stages of campaign coverage. There's decades of muscle memory that results in many outlets putting together the same old horse race style reporting as we lead up to and tick off primary after primary. However, Donald Trump, widely talked about as the presumptive Republican nominee for president, is an unprecedented candidate. The former president is currently facing 91 criminal charges across state and federal cases. And we also know, thanks to reporting from the Washington Post and others, that Trump and his associates have been developing alarming plans for a second term that would consolidate executive power, weaponize the Justice Department against his political opponents, and invoke the Insurrection Act to have the military respond to protests. Our next guest says not enough people know about these risks of a second Trump presidency and that the news media are dropping the ball when it comes to talking about them. We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. How aware are you of Trump's plans for an actual second term? What have you been reading, hearing, or seeing from the news coverage about Trump's plans for retribution against his political opponents? What do you want to see the media do differently when it comes to covering Trump? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Margaret Sullivan is a Guardian U.S. columnist where she writes on media, politics, and culture. She was previously the Washington Post media columnist and the New York Times public editor. Margaret, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
Well, before we get into specific recommendations for media, I just want to reflect a bit on that type of horse race coverage that we're familiar with. Reacting to a poll, making that kind of a story in itself. Why do you think that type of political coverage has been so persistent over the years?
You know, I think it's easy. That's part of it. It's very easy to do a story about a poll. You know, it's there's numbers. You can say they're neck and neck or this person's pulling ahead or not. It doesn't really require a lot of reporting. It doesn't require a lot of thought. And it's kind of knee-jerk. Now, I'm not saying that journalists are lazy, but it's a way to do an interesting story that doesn't really require any kind of, real reporting energy or much staff. So it's a very easy kind of thing to do. And it's the kind of thing we've been doing for a long time, so we know how to do it.
Yeah. Do you think it made perhaps more sense in a pre-Trump era, or did it always need a bit of refreshing?
It never was great journalism, but I think that in the pre-Trump era, you know, you basically had for many years, you know, two candidates, two different parties, two candidates who had different positions on things, but they were both kind of in the tradition of normal politics. But with Trump, especially as we head into this, what would be a second term, not a second consecutive term, but a second term for him, the kinds of plans that he's hatching really mean that the coverage needs to change. So that horse race coverage, you know, there's a place for it, but I don't think it should dominate the way it generally does.
And thanks to some reporting that's been done and from the Heritage Foundation's so-called Project 2025 documents, we do know something about the plans for a second Trump presidency should he be elected. Just to set the stage here, what are some of the things that you see the media not talking about enough when it comes to that?
So we know about these kinds of things because big news organizations like the New York Times or the Washington Post or ProPublica have done the stories. So it's not as if, you know, we're in the dark completely. But I think, you know, local news organizations and cable TV and network news are kind of ignoring these plans that are being made by Trump and his allies to do some really radical things in a second term. And you set it up beautifully in the introduction to weaponize the Justice Department, to, you know, invoke the Insurrection Act. So if people are protesting in the street, they could send the military out to go after political opponents in a very radical way. I mean, these are things that they continue to sort of chip away at the guardrails of our democracy and could really change the kind of America we live in. So that's so important that I think it should be dominating coverage. And, you know, we hear a lot about the same things all the time. So this is one of the things I think we should start hearing a lot about all the time.
And some of these things are in line with topics that President Trump has talked about before, going after his political opponents, cracking down on protesters. But it seems like here there's a more concerted, coordinated, documented effort going on. Is that part of the reason why this needs to rise to a higher level for the media?
Yeah, I do think it's at a different level. I think in Trump's first term, you know, he came in as an unusual candidate, but all these systems were set up that kind of tended to restrain what he could do. There were, you know, there were longtime public servants, not cronies, in positions. I mean, if you think back to the Georgia case in which then President Trump said to the Secretary of State, you know, we just need to find, you need to find me another 11,000 votes. That Secretary of State, who was a Republican, said, you know, essentially said, that's, I don't do that, and refused to do what Trump was asking him to do. But if there's an effort to put, you know, yes men and cronies in all these positions, you may not have a dutiful and conscientious public servant like that who will push back. And it really isn't about party. It's about how people get appointed.
We're talking with Margaret Sullivan right now, Guardian U.S. columnist, about how she thinks the media can do a better job of covering the dangers of a second Trump presidency. You can join in, too, with your questions, your comments. What do you want to see the media do differently when it comes to covering a Trump candidacy? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Margaret, when a news outlet does cover these topics, what are some of the ways you see them perhaps still falling short or missing the mark?
Well, I think that we go into this thing that, you know, sometimes is called false equivalency, or sometimes it's called both sides-ism, which means that we tend to play it safe, too safe sometimes, by equating things that aren't really equal. In other words, we say, in essence, this side of the situation says that it's raining outside, and this side of the situation says, no, it's not. Well, there actually is a truth there, and just having everybody say their thing and not trying to get to the truth of it is a dereliction of duty. So when we do that with politics, and we give everybody an equal say, even if one side is lying, even if one side is anti-democratic, you know, that's actually not how it should work. There's an expression that the famous Watergate journalist Carl Bernstein likes to say, and I think his former partner in crime, Bob Woodward, likes to say, which is get to the closest approximation to the truth that we can. And we don't really get there by equating unequal things. And that is a tendency that the media has because, I mean, for good reason, we want to be fair. We want to be seen as neutral. But sometimes it's not really fair to just go down the middle and equate things that aren't equal.
And in your recent column on this, you point out some of the language that is used in articles about Trump's plans for a second presidency. You use words like pussyfooting around and scaredy cat language. Do you think there's a level of fear of being seen as unfair that kind of leads to some of this both sidesism that you're talking about?
I do. I mean, I experience it myself, you know, and I'm a columnist, so I get to express my opinion. But if people start saying to me, oh, you know, you're a partisan hack or you're a lefty or whatever it may be, I don't want to be seen that way. I want to be seen as a neutral, although opinionated, you know, impartial journalist. So you have, you know, imagine a whole news organization that needs to be seen as fair. And they're getting this criticism, which the right has become very, very skilled at being aggressive about. And so what's the tendency? Well, I'm going to, you know, kind of change the way I'm doing things. Maybe I'll move the whole thing over to the right. But the thing is, it never satisfies. It's set up not to satisfy. So I think the media gets to feeling on the defensive. Journalists get to feeling on the defensive. And the way they cope with it is by doing this kind of false equivalent journalism.
I want to give a listen to an example of a journalist that you say recently got it right when it comes to covering specifically election denialism. Here's a clip of George Stephanopoulos interviewing House Majority Leader Steve Scalise of Louisiana earlier this month on ABC's This Week.
Can you say unequivocally that the 2020 election was not stolen?
Well, what I've told you is there are states that didn't follow their laws. That is what the state constitution, the U.S. Constitution requires. I've seen in my own state where we had to send our elections commissioner to jail years ago for fraud and corruption, and we cleaned up our act in our state. Every state ought to follow the laws that are on their books. That's what the U.S. Constitution says.
That's not what I asked. I said, can you say unequivocally that the 2020 election was not stolen?
Look, Joe Biden's president. I know you and others want to talk about 2020. We're focused on the future. We've talked about 2020 a lot. We're talking about how to get our country back on track, how to get our economy moving, how to stand up to the bad actors around the world.
And that question got batted back and forth several times in that interview, eventually grounding things to a halt. Given that that can be the result of those interviews, what do you see as the purpose of coverage like that?
So I think that, you know, Stephanopoulos did a good job in that he followed up. He was basically trying to get Steve Scalise to say, you know, to say one way or the other, did he think the election was stolen or did he think the election was not stolen? We know that the election was not stolen. There's no reason to think that it was. And Steve Scalise knows that very well, too. I mean, he went so far as to say, look, Biden's the president. You know, he was giving him that much. But he doesn't want to say the election wasn't stolen because there's a political price to pay for that. And the political price is that Trump would be mad at him. And, you know, Trump has an iron grip on the party to the point where people won't say what they know to be true. So I think it's admirable to follow up like that and try to press for an answer. And if you can't get one, I mean, eventually he basically cut off the interview because he wasn't getting a straight answer. And I think I'd like to see more of that.
We're talking with Margaret Sullivan right now, columnist for The Guardian US. We're talking about how the news media have been covering the risks of a second Trump presidency and how they could do it better. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see the media do different, if anything, in covering a Trump candidacy? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kinetter. Right now, we're picking up our talk with journalist Margaret Sullivan, now a columnist for Guardian US. She says the news media, national and local, aren't doing enough to warn people about Donald Trump's authoritarian plans for a second term were he to be elected president. We're also taking your calls at 800-642-1234. And we can go to the phones now. We have Nels with us in Denton. Hi, Nels.
Hi. I had a question. She was talking about what can the media do in order to better prepare everybody for, you know, a possible next Trump presidency or the dangers of that. My thoughts on that are just tell the truth. I mean, we went through the whole Russian collusion thing. That was all false. It's been proven as being false. The media jumped all over that. All of the major networks were talking about how they had irrefutable evidence that this happened, and it was all a lie. So why don't you just tell the truth? It may be that the majority of the people in America think that Trump would be the best president.
Gotcha. Nels, thanks for the call. And Margaret, Nels saying that the media can get out ahead of itself a little bit. What do you think?
Well, I think that I actually have to disagree with Nels about the Russia coverage. While it's true that no collusion was proven, there's no question that Russia tried to interfere with the 2016 election. I mean, that's a fact. And, so I think this idea that that was all a hoax and the media is at fault is untrue. Yeah, they probably went a little crazy with the coverage, and I take the point on that. But, you know, by saying just tell the truth, I think that good journalists do that, but there are a lot of choices that get made along the way. What do you emphasize? What goes in a headline? How do you cover something? How much emphasis do you give? And those are the kinds of, I guess, nuances that I'm talking about here.
Another thing I was curious about, Margaret, is the reach of a news story or a news outlet. Sometimes it can seem like the New York Times or whatever outlet you might choose has its baked-in audience. Are there new ways you would like to see newsrooms kind of reaching out to people that might not normally see their coverage?
So one of the things that I find very troubling is that local newspapers and local news in general is in trouble. And I'm so glad that, you know, we have you and other public radio stations like you to get the word out to people. But, you know, with local newspapers being so decimated, it's hard for people to absolutely know what's going on. And we're all kind of in our echo chambers. We're you know, many of us, some are watching this kind of thing. Some are watching that kind of thing. So I think that, you know, those news outlets that are very influential, I'd like to see them work more with local journalists and beef up local coverage as much as they can. I mean, there's so much attention paid to national politics. It would be great for them to divert some of that energy and some of that staff to helping local news outlets do, you know, do their job a little better. And there are also a lot of ways that local journalism can be boosted. For one thing, I think people need to pay much more attention to it and to support their local outlets. So that's really important.
And I'm curious, too, about the local TV news is one place where I know a lot of people get the majority of their news. And there's limited time in the format to cover something as in-depth as this. Sometimes you get a two and a half minute story about the latest political poll. How would you like to see those local outlets, especially TV, cover this kind of stuff?
Right. I think they ought to get their heads together and think about what their coverage is really going to be and to try to move away from that sort of simple horse race coverage. You can do a story about the actual effects of a presidency or the stakes of the election, the consequences. You can do it in a short amount of time, but you have to put some time and energy into thinking about what's our mission here. And our mission ought to be to really inform the public. So when they go to the voting booth, you know, they may not have the same opinion that you or I or someone else does, but they know what they're getting. And I think that's the key to this whole thing.
Now, it's possible that if news media effectively communicate these dangers and reaches all the people they want to, people still might choose Donald Trump. But you write in your recent column that when people understand the risks to their rights, they vote accordingly. Where do you look for evidence of that?
Well, I think we see it in your state and around the country with the restrictions of abortion rights. It turns out that people really didn't appreciate the way those rights were so precipitously removed. And there's been all kinds of, you know, referenda and laws and changes that have resulted from that, because people felt it as, hey, this is the government taking away my rights that have been well established. So I think, of course, abortion rights it's pretty easy to understand. You know, it's something that everybody can get their head around. I think this business of, you know, the sort of erosion of democracy is a little more subtle, but I still think that we can get it across to people. And when they understand it, I think they will probably be affected by it when they go to vote.
We've got time for, I think, one more call. JJ is with us in Two Rivers. Hi, JJ.
Hi. I was wondering why there's not stricter regulation from, like, the FCC on being dishonest on news programs. I mean, the reason we're in this position is because channels like Newsmax and One News and even Fox just blatantly and intentionally misinform their viewers. Wasn't the FCC have something, you know, to do about that? I mean, we spend so much time and effort bleeping bad words and blurring nipples. Why aren't we worried about the honesty and integrity of the coverage?
JJ, thanks for the call. Margaret, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I'm very reluctant. I mean, I share the feeling that I hate to see lies circulating in the media, but I'm also very reluctant to have the government controlling the press in any way. And I think one form of accountability that we are seeing is in the courts, because Dominion Voting Systems sued Fox News for defamation and ended up with a $787 million settlement Fox basically had to admit that they lied to the public. And I think that that's probably a better and more promising avenue for some accountability. But it is, I agree, it's very frustrating to see the lack. We feel like there's nothing we can do about this, and it has such broad effects. But I'm not sure the answer is for the government to kind of crack down on it.
And Margaret, in just our last minute or so here, you're running a newsroom in 2024, hypothetically. What is your message to your reporters about how to cover the Trump candidacy?
So there's a press critic whose name is Jay Rosen, and he has coined a phrase, not the odds, but the stakes. So I would get across to my journalists, my reporters, what we want to cover here is not the horse race, the odds, but the stakes. What are the consequences if this person's elected? What are the consequences of if this person is elected? And most prominently, what are the consequences if Donald Trump is reelected? How is our country going to change? How are we going to get that across to people in a way that's fair and that's impartial but still is powerful?
We'll leave it there. Margaret, thanks for taking the time and talking with us today.
Thanks. It's a privilege. I appreciate it.
Margaret Sullivan is a columnist for The Guardian U.S. We talked with her about how the news media are covering the Donald Trump candidacy and his more authoritarian goals for a second term as president, and how the media can do it more effectively.